Welcome to the East County Magazine Live Radio Show, the voice of East County, bringing you the hottest news and coolest events from the communities of San Diego's East County. We're your community radio, representing the public interest, not special interests. Broadcasting from the heart of East County in Descanso with your host, Miriam Raftery.
This is Allie McCall at KNSJ bringing you the latest weather report on flash flooding. Heavy rains caused flash flooding on Sunday from Shelter Valley to Borrego Springs, including areas burned by the Vallecito and Banner fires. Bob Kutcher, a Borrego Springs resident, said this was the worst flash flooding in years. He recorded 1.04 inches of rain at a weather station that he runs in the same location. Flooding also occurred in Ocotillo Wells and other areas. Highway 78 was shut down Sunday night due to rock slides, but has since reopened. A flash flood warning remains in effect for East County mountains, valleys, and deserts through Monday night. Monitor the news to learn if this becomes elevated to a flash flood warning, which means flooding is imminent or occurring. Flash flooding is nature's number one killer, the National Weather Service warns. Never try to cross a flooded roadway or wade through flooded areas. Turn around, don't drown.
Now, straight from the headlines, we bring you the latest top newsmakers. This is Miriam Raftery with East County Magazine and KNSJ, bringing you a special report on the resignation of Mayor Bob Filner. On Friday, the mayor announced that he will step down from office effective Friday, August 30th, under a deal that will require the city to pay up to $90,000 in legal fees to defend the mayor against sexual harassment allegations. The city council approved the agreement 7-0 in a closed-door session. Councilmember Scott Sherman and Myrtle Cole were absent. Todd Gloria will serve as interim mayor, and a special election will be held 90 days after the mayoral seat is vacated. 18 women have claimed inappropriate behavior by Filner over the years, ranging from sexual harassment to unwanted flirtation, but only one, city employee Irene McCormick-Jackson, has filed a lawsuit. In an emotional farewell speech, the mayor apologized for what he called his personal failings and to those who have been hurt, but he insisted that he believes he will ultimately be cleared of legal wrongdoing and further contended that he is being forced from office by the city's power brokers in what he called a political coup based on unproven allegations. Here is the mayor's full farewell speech.
Thank you all. Mr. President, thank you. Is this working? Thank you. I would say thank you for allowing me to be here, but obviously this is not a happy time for any of us, not for the city of San Diego, not for those who represent. And for my own part in causing all this, I offer a deep apology, certainly to all the citizens of San Diego and through you to the citizens that you represent. The city should not have been put through this. And my own personal failures were responsible. And I apologize to the city. I have a lot of supporters out there. I apologize to all of you. I think I let you down. We had a chance to do a progressive vision in the city for the first time in 50 years. As I'll say later, we need you to carry that vision forward. This is not the time to let it die. But I apologize to all of you. I would like to say especially to my former fiancé, Bronwyn, I love you very much. You came to love San Diego as much as I did. And you did memorable things in the short time that you were First Lady. And I personally apologize for the hurt that I have caused you, Ronald. To all the women that I offended, I had no intention to be offensive, to violate any physical or emotional space. I was trying to establish personal relationships, but the combination of awkwardness and hubris, I think, led to behavior that many found offensive. I again, as I have in the past, sincerely apologize to all of you, and I will try to make amends in any suitable manner. So for the part that I have played, and I take responsibility for putting the city through a very bad time, again, I apologize to all of you. Certainly was never my intention to be a mayor who went out like this. Now, I have to caution the council about one thing, and I guess the city. You know, I started my political career facing lynch mobs. And I think we have just faced one here in San Diego.
Right.
And you're going to have to deal with that.
That's right.
In a lynch mob mentality, rumors become allegations. Allegations become facts. Facts become evidence of sexual harassment, which have led to demands for my resignation and recall.
Without evidence.
Not one allegation, members of the council, has ever been independently verified or proven in court. I have never sexually harassed anyone. But the hysteria that has been created, and many of you helped to feed, is the hysteria of a lynch mob. Now, as I said, I faced lynch mobs many times when I was younger. No evidence was needed. The mob knew who was guilty, who needed due process. Well, ladies and gentlemen, democracy needs due process.
Amen.
San Diego needs due process. Those of you in the media and in politics who fed this hysteria, I think, need to look at what you helped create, because you have unleashed a monster. And I think we'll be paying for this affront to democracy for a long time. Now, the hysteria ended up playing into the hands of those who wanted a political coup. The removal of a democratically elected mayor purely by rumor and innuendo. Now, I am responsible for providing the ammunition. I did that, and I take full responsibility. But there are well-organized interests who have run this city for 50 years who pointed the gun. And the media and their political agents pulled the trigger. That, ladies and gentlemen, is not what democracy is about. I was elected to make changes. People opposed me from the beginning. They found the weapons they needed in my own failures as a human being. But they found those weapons, and they used them in a bloody and vicious way. So you're going to have to deal with that if you care about democracy. What I would like to leave you with is what I started my campaign on. And that is a vision of what this city ought to be and what we can become. You've watched, most of you supported as we looked at Balboa Park and prepared for the centennial, we got the cars out of Plaza de Panama for the first time ever. If you haven't been by there, go by. It's an incredible canvas on which we can all paint what the future of Balboa Park will be. We've protected seals, and we protected La Jolla from the poop from the seals and others. We negotiated tens of millions of dollars in savings for you all in our leases of our buildings. We had a structurally balanced budget, and we joined in a 5-year labor agreement, which for the first time gives us a stability, ability to help our employees, and without further vilification of them, for those who run our city. As you know, I ran on a platform of neighborhoods, of making them livable, walkable, bikeable. We've hired world-class people to help in that. Our planning director, Bill Fulton, the incubator that we have established now on the fourth floor, with world-class urban thinkers, will help prepare the way for really exciting neighborhood adventures. With many of you, we put the stress back on public safety. We've had a terrible, terrible downward spiral in the ability of this city to provide adequate fire and police protection. We've started to reverse it. I hope you will continue to do that. Our economy is still fragile, but we work together to prevent a vision for our port and the expansion of trade and thousands of jobs. We've started to solarize or use alternative energy on all the public buildings that are owned by not only the city, but the county and the school district, which will not only do our part for the environment, but create, again, hundreds, if not thousands, of jobs. We tried to make the border more efficient, which will put billions of dollars in our economy. And through all this, I've tried to look at the working people of San Diego, those who struggle every day to make this city great. And I have to particularly thank the leaders of our working community, the labor community, for helping me not only in the first 7 months, but the last few weeks. I needed both the time and the support to reflect on what matters to me personally, as well as the confidence to know that the city will move forward. And labor leaders helped me on both fronts. They encouraged me to seek professional help, which I did and am continuing. They allowed me to focus on what's best for everyone whose lives I have to influence. And when it seemed that a lot of the political structure was paralyzed and distracted by my personal situation, labor leaders worked with my staff and with the city council, and you guys passed a prevailing wage measure, which will provide a real boost to working families and to our local economy and to taxpayers. I ran for office to advance these types of policies, and I can leave now confident that labor will continue to pull our community together as we need them. I hope you will look at a book I recommended to all of you called The First Industrial Revolution. It says what we have to do as a city, a region, state, and a nation to deal with climate change and the loss of fossil fuel future. We've introduced, I hope you will pass, a climate action plan. But we wanted to be the first city in North America to accomplish the first industrial revolution. I hope you will look at that. We've extended, as you have all helped with, our support for the arts and culture in this community to really help the homeless and unemployed veterans get their self-respect back. And as you know, as a city, our particular strength comes from our position as part of the biggest binational metropolitan area in the world. We've had a tremendous acceleration of our relationships with Tijuana and with Mexico, which I hope you will continue. We have an office there now. The planning for a binational Olympic bid is in the works. I hope you will not be put off by gloom and doom about that ability. It is the most exciting thing that we can do as a region, and I hope, and just the planning of it will be exciting for us to pull forward, to move forward. And through this all, as I have done through my whole life, we've stressed that the strength of this city is on its diversity. And I don't have to tell you, you know, this city is a majority of people of color. And yet, if you look at any economic or political group in this city, you can't tell that. We have not tapped the full strength of the diversity of this community. We're all in this together, ladies and gentlemen. And we are stronger when we include everybody at the table, everybody at the economic table, everybody at the political table. We're all in this together. Obviously, this is the toughest decision of my life. You all know me to be a fighter. I made promises to the people of San Diego to give everyone an equal opportunity, a chance to be heard, a chance to have that seat at the table. That vision terrified a lot of folks. And the fight for control of this city has become, as I said, vicious and bloody. Unfortunately, on my own, and you all helped cut off any support for that, I can't afford to continue this battle. Even though I know, if given due process, I would be vindicated. Right. It's not my nature to walk away from a fight, and I want the people of San Diego to know my vision that you voted for in the mayoral election will not die. Now, Lord knows I am not perfect. I made a lot of mistakes. But in my heart, my desire for a progressive world will drive me to keep going. I will not give up. And in the final analysis, of course, politics is not about any of us as individuals. It should not be about me, but ideas that move us forward. Whoever will be the next mayor, my hope is that these ideas that have resonated with our San Diego communities are continued and respected. I was at Madison Square Garden when Ted Kennedy said in 1980, as he conceded to President Carter in the nomination for the Democratic president, "The work goes on, the cause endures. The hope still lives, and the dream shall never die." Thank you, members of the council.
Council did hear public testimony from speakers split nearly evenly between those in support and those against the mayor. The mayor's supporters came mostly from poor and ethnically diverse communities. Opponents mostly came from wealthier neighborhoods. Supporters spoke of the good the mayor has done for minorities and the disadvantaged. For example, Maria Ochoa, who spoke in Spanish through a translator, said that Filner sought justice for those with little or no power. Rosa Plasencia agreed. She said, "When we needed help, he was always there to help us." But Lonnie Lutar opposed having the city cover any of Filner's liabilities. "I come before you as a concerned citizen and an advocate of victims," she said. "The decision has to be in the community's best interest. There has to be no payment." Carol Eastman also urged the council not to pay any legal fees for the mayor. Instead, she wanted to allow the recall effort to continue. "Do not sell us out," she implored. A resident of the Alpha Project, a shelter for homeless people, said that while the mayor personally helped her, she believes he should resign. Enrique Morones, an advocate for immigrants, told East County Magazine this was a sad day for the city. City Attorney Jan Goldsmith said the city will agree to provide a joint legal defense for the city and Filner, because under California law, the city is strictly liable for sexual harassment of employees by supervisors, including the mayor. The city cannot avoid liability by claiming lack of knowledge of the conduct. The agreement does not protect Filner from criminal charges, should any be filed. Complaints made to the sheriff had been referred to the state attorney general because both the district attorney, Bonnie DeManis, and the city attorney have recused themselves. Todd Gloria, who will serve as acting mayor after August 30th, said it is time to move on. He called for a time of healing and also pledged a top-down review in the mayoral office, including sexual harassment policies. Let's listen now to Todd Gloria's remarks.
Okay. Yeah, we're rolling. Here we go.
Thank you all for joining me here today. As you know, Mayor Bob Filner has resigned effective Friday, August 30th at 5 p.m. Although none of us is glad to have reached this point in our city's history, I think we all share a sense of relief that we can now begin to put this period behind us. And most importantly, fill the leadership void in the mayor's office. The city of San Diego needs and deserves a mayor. According to Article 15 of the City Charter, the presiding officer of the council president, assumes the role of mayor until a special election can be called and a new mayor elected. I stand before you today humbled by the opportunity to serve our city and ready to take on the duties of mayor at 5:01 next Friday. San Diego will have a functioning mayor's office within a matter of days. One of our first priorities must be to schedule an election so that voters can choose our next mayor. City Clerk Liz Malin will establish a timeline for that election process as quickly as possible. I've asked her to be prepared to address all the legal and practical requirements by Monday. When the city clerk is ready, I will work with the city council to call a special election. Council President Pro Tem Sherry Leitner will lead meetings of the city council while I fulfill the duties of mayor. Sherry is a trusted colleague and an able council member, and I know that she will carry out these duties well. Given today's developments, it's more important than ever to focus our attention on maintaining essential city services. I will address these more directly after Bob Filner leaves office, but I hope that current department leadership will work with me to keep the city on an even footing. I appreciate each of these public servants' commitment and dedication to providing effective municipal services to San Diegans. Over the next few months, until an election can be conducted, I'll be working together with the council and the city's executive team to establish priorities for addressing the concerns facing our city. Our objective is to provide our citizens with a fully functioning city government with ethics, integrity, and transparency. To that end, work will begin on a number of fronts. First, a top-down review of all city departments to ensure that they are properly staffed and that their actions comply with all city rules and regulations. This will include swift action on a number of pending items that have languished on Mayor Filner's desk for many months now. Second, we will address the backlog of requests for public records. I intend to break through the logjam of approvals for these requests and to deliver documents as required under the law in a timely fashion. Third, I will conduct weekly media briefings to ensure transparency and accountability. We must communicate with our citizens and with those who do business with our city that we are making every effort possible to correct our problems and that nothing less will be acceptable. This is not an exhaustive list. I will look forward to sharing more about these and other issues remaining from Bob's time here after I officially assume the role of mayor. As you might anticipate, there will be some staffing changes needed to make this happen. And I will announce those changes as they occur. I imagine each of you have specific questions about policies, projects, procedures at the city. Today is not the day for addressing those questions. We will get to them without further delay in the weeks to come. Thank you in advance for your patience as we work through the challenges that have resulted from Mayor Filner's time in office and his upcoming resignation. I'd like to thank my city council members who have worked together to guide the city during this time and who have never lost their focus on serving San Diegans.
After his speech, East County Magazine asked whether progressive policies of working in neighborhoods will continue. His answer was an emphatic yes. He said, The council members standing here with me care deeply about their districts and the neighborhoods. That will not change. County Democratic Chair Francine Busby later issued a statement voicing relief at the resignation, but vowed to see the Democratic political agenda continued. She noted that voters endorsed a distinctly progressive agenda that includes investing in renewable energy, highlighting our role as a border community, and standing up for working families by embracing the diversity of our people and the strength of our neighborhoods. That mandate is greater than any one person, she said, and it now remains our responsibility and privilege to see it through. Matt Palomari, who launched the recall campaign against Filner that will now be dropped because of the mayor's resignation, said he is proud of San Diegans, but looks forward to returning to private life. He issued a warning, however, to San Diego politicians. A new sheriff is in town, he concluded, and that sheriff is the people of San Diego.
You're listening to East County Magazine, the voice of East County. We reflect your interests, the people's interests, not special interests. As a nonprofit, we rely on community support. You can help us provide community news and reflect a rich diversity of voices by donating or becoming a sustaining member at www.eastcountymagazine.org.
This is a public service announcement from the nonprofit East County Magazine regarding the Viejas Wildfire and Emergency Alert Service. During a wildfire, it's critical to receive timely news about evacuations, shelters, threatened communities, and other vital information. Viejas Wildfire and Emergency Alerts are available free to the public via email, or you can receive the alerts via Twitter on your mobile phone. You can get information on how to sign up for these free alerts at www.eastcountymagazine.org. The Viejas Wildfire and Emergency Alerts are produced by East County Magazine with support from the Viejas Band of the Kumeyaay Nation.
KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso, your network for social justice.
This is Miriam Raftery, and now I'm here with Nadine Abbott, our reporter for KNSJ and East County Magazine, who is best known to most of you for her coverage on the scene of major wildfires in East County. But lately, she's been covering a different kind of catastrophe downtown for us. Yes, you guessed it, the mayoral controversies, including the resignation of Mayor Filner amid sexual abuse allegations. Nadine, thank you for coming on the show today.
You're welcome.
How would you characterize the media coverage overall of this unfolding story?
Well, some of the coverage has been even, but we also have had quite a bit of coverage that has been skewed on either side of the political aisle. Coverage has also been excessive in some aspects, and you have to wonder what else is going on that is not getting covered. Mm-hmm. For example, we had the general plan, the five-year plan for CAL FIRE, and while the media did cover the bringing online of the backbone for the communication systems that will cover the backcountry fire stations, no media outlet, for the most part, has really gone through the plan. Well, except us.
Yeah, very true. That's a good point. It's really been a media feeding frenzy in a sense where they've latched onto this story and that just seems to be the headline day in and day out. Now, you mentioned you've seen some examples of bias on both sides of the aisle in the media locally. Can you give us just a couple examples of that?
On the left side, we had the people from the San Diego Free Press that basically went on the storyline that this was just a big conspiracy to get rid of the mayor and that all the allegations couldn't be true. That was the beginning, and then they started to change as they realized that...
Even though he had admitted to, if not criminal wrongdoing, at least some failings serious enough to voluntarily check himself into rehab. Now, what about on the right side of the aisle?
On the right side, you also had the union trip.
UT San Diego.
Yes. Which basically latched on the idea that he was probably the worst thing ever. Though, to their credit, they did run a story on Filner's participation as a freedom rider in the civil rights movement.
How many of the media outlets actually did what we would consider critical analysis? In other words, not just reacting and saying, this is what he said, this is what she said, but who went beyond that to actually dig out facts behind these various allegations?
I would say the Voice of San Diego did a pretty even keel job on that. Mm-hmm. We tried. And also, I would say the San Diego Reader had at least one blogger, liberal historian.
That's interesting. No reporter in town did this. It took a blogger to dig out some interesting ties. Tell us about that.
He claimed that all the women went to KPBS. It wasn't all the women, but it was a fair number of the women who went to KPBS. And KPBS has ties to the Port of San Diego.
So he brought out ties between KPBS, the Port of San Diego,
and the developers downtown.
Right. Large financial ties, we might add.
And we may also argue that the Port of San Diego was not exactly the right tree to bark up, since the head of the port, Nelson, he was not just a big donor to the Filner campaign, but also a confidant of the mayor. Mm-hmm. But he raised the question, what else is going on? And we have actually started to look into it, and we're finding out that there's more to the story and there are other layers to the story.
Very, very interesting. Yeah, and the same blogger also documented ties between at least a few of the women who were accusing Filner and, you know, some of the moneyed interests out there, the port and the developers and so forth. Certainly not all of them. There's certainly no proof either way whether either that everything was true, because nothing's been in a court of law yet, or for that matter, whether any of it could possibly have been fabricated for other reasons. So we may never know the full story on that. The other thing I'd like you to tell us a little bit about, Nadine, is what it was like down there in the middle of this media feeding frenzy. You've got some interesting stories to tell about the behavior of some fellow media people,
well,
I understand.
One of the things that you quickly notice when you have a story that becomes of national importance is that you have national crews, regional crews, and local crews. Local media will actually help each other, will talk with each other. We participate, we go with on emergency scenes regularly, so we give information to each other.
Right.
But
passed back and forth.
We had an incident with an LA camerawoman. When we were setting up for the press conference after the resignation, she kept telling all of the local media to get out of her camera shot.
So an LA out-of-town TV journalist telling the local media that's been on the ground covering this from day one that you should get out of her way so she could get a better picture. How did you react?
Well, we just told her to just pull forward because otherwise she was going to get blocked anyway. And none of us moved.
Very interesting. Now, I understand you have some interesting tales to tell about a certain national media outlet that sent someone who seemed to be rather unprepared for the assignment.
Well, the reporter was sent, and he was still thinking that San Diego is a small Navy town.
Complaining about having to cover something in this small town.
Yeah, it's not a small town. It's the eighth largest media market. He was also convinced that it's a very Republican city, which all of the data shows is trending purple to blue.
Yeah, actually, the majority is a Democratic registration in the city of San Diego, and so you'd think they'd do a little homework here.
We also overheard a reporter from another national outlet surprised that San Diego City Council has a photo of the President of the United States right up there where you can see it, President Barack Obama. In my experience covering City Hall, there's always a photo of the president,
right,
regardless of
who
happens to be.
That's true. As is common in many government offices. Now, you've actually gotten praise from people on both the left and the right, major political operatives, for your coverage for East County Magazine and KNSJ. So, Nadine, I really want to thank and compliment you for doing what journalists should do, which is to try to keep personal views out of it. You know, every one of us has people we vote for, people we may privately like, or whose agenda we may privately support. But the appropriate role of journalists, of course, is to keep your own views out of it and to do your very best to be fair and accurate, you know, reflecting all voices. For those of us that live in East County, why should East County listeners be concerned about what's happening with the mayorship in San Diego?
Because people who live outside of San Diego, when they think San Diego, they think San Diego City. And if you're thinking about putting a business anywhere in the county, you will first think San Diego City. And if San Diego City is not having a stable moment, you will think twice about putting a business in El Cajon.
So it could have had an economic rippling effect throughout the county.
And the city of Chula Vista is having that problem right now. They're trying to get from under the San Diego tourism idea and creating themselves as a tourist destination. Mm-hmm. And they're having a heck of a problem with it.
So maybe that'll get easier with the change at the helm. What about energy issues? That's certainly a very big topic in East County. How do you think that the resignation of Mayor Filner may impact city and county energy policies.
Well, Mayor Filner was pushing for a distributive network, energy network, relying a lot on rooftop solar.
Right. He actually supported creating an alternative to San Diego Gas and Electric Company that would be an energy cooperative where people could buy energy produced from rooftop solar and other locally produced clean energy sources, specifically not buying from nuclear, gas, you know, fossil fuels, but also not buying power from remote wind and desert solar projects that have their own set of environmental issues out here.
And given the size of San Diego City, that made him a bane to the energy companies. I should mention before we go that the city of Santee is looking at creating a similar cooperative.
Yes, they are, which would be very, very interesting. Maybe we'll yet see that across the region. Now, one more issue, and that is the question of who will replace the mayor. Of course, Todd Gloria is the acting mayor, or will be after August 30th when the mayor officially steps down, for about 3 months there until the special election. How do you think the media coverage has been thus far in the analysis of who may step forward to run and who has the best chance to win?
It is kind of interesting that Lori Saldana has not been mentioned in any of the polls.
I found that curious too, Nadine. You're talking about the UT San Diego poll that seemed to include prominent conservative Republicans and also more moderate to conservative Democrats, but they left out liberal names that have been bandied about within some of the party circles and progressive organizations, Lori Saldana certainly being the most prominent of those. Is that an effort, you think, to push the coverage on this to influence public opinion?
Yes. And also, they will try to suppress the voting south of the 8, which is where Mayor Filner had most of his support.
Interesting. Of course,
it's a special election.
Yeah, that would not be media doing that specifically. Yeah, it should be noted that Doug Manchester, who owns the Union Tribune, has been a major, major contributor to conservative political candidates and causes through the years. He has been actually criticized by national journalism organizations and national journalism professional publications for allowing his own editorial bias to seep into the actual news coverage, even going so far as to wrap the front page of his newspaper in editorials for conservative candidates, which is considered taboo in the journalism industry.
And we should all mention that that was done last election when the Union Tribune came completely behind Carl DeMaio.
Yeah, Carl DeMaio, who has his own set of issues right now. For those that haven't heard, he's been accused of exposing himself in a public restroom at City Hall. So we'll see what happens with that, whether we have another mayoral candidate scandal unfolding here.
At least he's a candidate, not the mayor.
Well, that's true. It may never be. Nadine, I want to thank you very, very much for coming in today. Is there anything else you'd like to add that I have not specifically asked you about on your mayoral coverage or the race?
The only thing to add is that people need to be careful when they read or they listen to news media, because everybody has an agenda.
Well, we're certainly trying very hard here to bring you the strongest arguments on all sides and let our listeners decide for yourselves. Thank you, Nadine, for coming in and joining us today on the East County Magazine Show on KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso. This is a public service announcement from the nonprofit East County Magazine regarding the Viejas Wildfire and Emergency Alert Service. During a wildfire, it's critical to receive timely news about evacuations, shelters, threatened communities, and other vital information. Viejas Wildfire and Emergency Alerts are available free to the public via email, or you can receive the alerts via Twitter on your mobile phone. You can get information on how to sign up for these free alerts at www.eastcountymagazine.org. The Viejas Wildfire and Emergency Alerts are produced by East County Magazine with support from the Viejas Band of the Kumeyaay Nation.
Now it's time for the Green Scene Report, highlighting energy, environmental, and sustainability issues in our community.
This is Miriam Raftery with East County Magazine and KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso. A second dust storm has struck Ocotillo on August 25th, just 2 days after an earlier dust storm swept through this desert community. Dust billowed thousands of feet into the air, dwarfing 500-foot-tall wind turbines. East County Magazine photographer Jim Pelley was in the middle of the storm and shot video that you can see on our site, www.eastcountymagazine.org. Resident Diane Tucker said she watched all afternoon from her dining room window as the storm descended to engulf the home of Pelley and neighbors. They were engulfed, she said. You couldn't even see over there. The dust storms that struck Ocotillo originated from the east, coming from Arizona, according to witnesses. An East County Magazine investigation has found that in the last 10 years, over 100 dust storms have been reported in Arizona, according to the National Oceanic and Atmospheric Administration. Dust storms have also increased in Texas and other areas of the Southwest in recent years. What's causing the recent flurry of dust storms? Some blame global warming, but there is another possible explanation. Our report found a correlation between construction of industrial-scale wind and solar projects that scrape bare the desert soil and outbreaks of dust storms. Since 2007, Arizona has added over 600 megawatts of industrial solar power, including over 500 megawatts in 2010 and 2011, shortly before the massive Phoenix dust storm made national news. That storm was called a haboob after the dust storms in the Sahara that are similar. Arizona had just completed its first industrial-scale wind farm, Dry Lake Wind in Mojave County, northeast of Phoenix, shortly before the haboob struck, in addition to adding a lot of industrial solar. In October of 2011, Lubbock, Texas was hit by the worst dust storm to strike inside the United States in decades. Lubbock is close to several industrial-scale wind projects, including the world's largest wind farm, Roscoe, which has 627 wind turbines. Combined, these wind projects near Lubbock have many thousands of wind turbines, and each one required massive grading and excavation of fragile desert soils. Edie Harmon, a wildlife biologist, had this to say after viewing photos of the Ocotillo dust storms. "Looks like the Dust Bowl or haboob dust storms that hit Arizona," she said, noting that such storms can be associated with increased exposure to valley fever fungal spores, especially after it rains. Valley fever has reached epidemic proportions in Arizona and California, according to the U.S. Centers for Disease Control. Valley fever concerns have also been raised by Kevin Emmerich of Basin and Range Watch, an environmental organization. Emmerich is concerned that large-scale wind and solar projects are increasing not only dust storms, which can cause respiratory problems, but also exposure to valley fever, a potentially deadly illness. He sent a photo to East County Magazine showing dust at NextEra's Genesis Solar Project in Riverside County, California. He wrote, "Perfect storm scenario on this one, too. It is about 3,000 acres of 100% grading." He added that he observed construction not being halted despite 35-mile-an-hour winds when the BLM had said the contractor was supposed to halt construction at 30-mile-an-hour winds. He added, "This is common out there. It is so bad you can't see through the dust, and this is an area that has several valley fever incidents." Valley fever symptoms develop after 1 to 4 weeks of exposure and can include fever, muscle ache, cough, headache, shortness of breath, tiredness, and skin lesions. Severe cases can result in death, particularly in vulnerable individuals, such as those with compromised immune systems and the elderly. A blood test is needed to diagnose the disease. Dust storms have potential to blow valley fever spores hundreds of miles away from where they originated. During the Cedar Fire, valley fever was diagnosed among patients in Chula Vista. The spores are believed to have blown in from desert areas during the storm, the firestorm. With multiple industrial-scale wind and solar projects planned in San Diego's East County on high desert and agricultural lands, the potential for dust storms that could reach San Diego is very real, but has been largely blown off by officials approving wind and solar projects in our area.
Some California farmers are voicing concern over the FDA's proposed implementation of the Food Safety Modernization Act. They say the rules are too excessive and may put some small farmers out of business. Judith Redman with Full Belly Farm sells her organic fruits and vegetables locally through farmers markets. She worries family farms like hers will be burdened by cost and regulations and may have trouble staying afloat, leaving all food production to the largest producers.
We think that the rules will be very difficult for organic and biologically diverse farming systems because they show a bias against the use of grazing animals and the use of compost.
The FDA estimates the new rules will cost a mid-sized farm about $13,000 to comply. Redmond believes this could result in less consumer choice at the farmer's market and grocery store as growers stop growing crops likely to come under stricter regulation. Ken Kimes with New Natives Farm in Watsonville has been a small farmer for more than three decades. He switched from growing sprouts to microgreens after enduring multiple FDA inspections.
You talk to any farmer who's dealt with the whole food safety thing, anything less than a large corporate farm, and they'll tell you it's just over the top, all the requirements and so forth, and some make sense and some don't make sense.
The FDA has extended the public comment period on the proposed changes to November. This is Lori Abbott, California News Service.
Welcome to Bookshelf, bringing you stories of local literary luminaries and some great books to read. My name is Raina Menashe, and I'll be your host for this segment. Today I'm interviewing Antonio F. Viana, author and educator. My guest has written 20 books and 6 screenplays since 2003. He's also created 3 popular workshops: Re-Careering at Any Age, How to Write a Book and Get Published, and How to Write a Screenplay. Welcome, Antonio. It's a pleasure talking with you.
Thanks for inviting me.
You have written 18 novels and 2 nonfiction books in a period of 10 years, and yet you also work as instructor and area chair of business at the University of Phoenix here in San Diego. How do you find the time and the motivation to write so much and on such a variety of themes?
To me, it's all about commitments and priorities. I mean, essentially, I do what I value in my life and where I want to spend my time. Uh-huh. This means that I don't do a lot of things, but I rather do a few things that I try to do very well, like being an expert. And my life is a 24/7 life because I can write anytime during the day or evening or anytime during the week. I can control what I do, and I really, really like that. So I do what I do because I want to become good at it and not become a generalist.
So you have to cut back on leisure activities.
I come back on a lot of leisure activities and a lot of sleep because there's only 24 hours in this day to be able to do what I want to do.
So in a typical day, how many hours do you write?
I'll schedule my hours for the whole week, probably on a Sunday. So yesterday I looked at my calendar and asked myself, what are my projects for this whole week? Mm-hmm. And I've got essentially 2 projects going on in the area of writing. And I'll look at probably 2 or 3 hours each day committed to some form of writing or editing or researching in the projects that I'm working on.
I'm very organized. You've been called a prime example of someone who's re-careered himself. I mean, I know that in your former life, you were an Air Force officer and human resources executive. So how did you transition from that to author?
I was working in Northern California, specifically San Francisco, with a professional medical group, and I was the chief HR executive. Mm-hmm. But I felt at a point in time that I needed to switch. I had the what I call the itch to switch. And I think everybody develops the itch sometime in their career,
right,
whether it's at 5 years, 10 years, 15 years, or whatever. But I developed the itch. But I really didn't know what I wanted to do if I had changed the human resources executive role. So like any good business person, I did an inventory of who I was and what I wanted to be. Mm-hmm. And so I analyzed my skills and my strengths and my weaknesses and my passions and all the things that go into sort of a self-evaluation. Mm-hmm. And I figured that I could do a couple of things very well outside of corporate life. And there was one thing that I was petrified of doing that I thought it could become a developmental opportunity for me. So I gave myself the title of ACE. A-C-E.
Okay.
A stands for author, C stands for career coach, and E stands for educator. I could be a career coach and educator pretty easily, but I really was petrified of writing. So writing became my developmental opportunity that I decided to commit to. And today, 10 years later, I'm really spending most of my time doing the writing. So it was a business plan that I created, and I considered myself to be the business. And I needed to figure out how I could make money as me, as that person who runs the business.
So if we could say that some writers are born and some are made, you made yourself.
I made myself. I was not an avid writer or an avid reader in the day. In fact, even today, I don't do a lot of reading of full books. I do reading for purposes of research and for looking at how writers are able to tell a compelling story or develop compelling characters.
Craft. Well, I know you've written novels in a variety of genres, books on espionage, murder, love stories, ghost stories, and even a vampire trilogy. Which book did you enjoy the most writing, and why? And is it difficult to cross types of books?
Yeah, I'm always asked this question about what my favorite book is. Uh-huh. And so I will answer that in a sort of circular way. I have two favorite books. One is my first book. It's called The Tale from a Ghost Dance. Mm-hmm. I had no idea what I was doing when I was writing this book. I was experimenting with my writing style. Mm-hmm. I was experimenting with creating stories and characters. And it's probably, although the book is still in print, it is the worst crafted book of all time.
If you do say so yourself.
If I do say so myself, but I love it because I look at the books that I'm writing now and I can see the growth that I have been able to accomplish in my writing career. So my second favorite book will always be my last book, because it shows what I'm really capable of doing. And that last book is called Scarlet Rose, and it just came out in January of this year.
I know that you've published independently, like so many authors are choosing to do in this new age. What made you go that route, and how do you market yourself?
I'm a control freak. I want to control what I do, and I want to own what I do. And the way to do that for me is look at independent publishing. Mm-hmm. So I'm with a print-on-demand publisher called Author Solutions. Essentially, I give them my manuscript, and I tell them what to do, how to put mm-hmm. it into a book format. I then pay them services for marketing, for editing, for all kinds of things that I would have to pay someone else to do if I was even with a traditional publisher. So the notion of independent publishing allows me to control what I want to do and market it in a way that I think is appropriate. And also, because I now do screenplays, because I own the novel, I can adapt that novel to a screenplay right. without asking permission from anyone.
Right. And do you have any screenplays that are being optioned? Or
I have six screenplays now being looked at in Hollywood. Five mm-hmm. of them are adapted from my novels. The sixth one, which is called Desperate, that just came out probably a month ago, mm-hmm. is an original screenplay. And the idea is to leverage the novel and the screenplay towards Hollywood.
One last question, Antonio. What are you writing now, and when will it be available?
I'm completing a novel called Crush. It's a suspense drama thriller novel. It's about telemarketing scams mm-hmm. and how this person overcomes a telemarketing scam. It probably will come out in January of next year.
Okay, look forward to it. Our time is up, but thanks again for joining us. For more information on Antonio F. Viana, please visit his website at www.vianabooks4u.com, and that's the number 4 and the letter U. Again, this is Raina Menashe, and you've been listening to East County Magazine's Bookshelf, bringing you stories of local literary luminaries and some great books to read.
This is Connie Beck with Ready, Set, Grow. I'm going to help you create healthy and beautiful gardens using less money, less hard work, and much more fun. I'd like to talk today about some trees that I absolutely love. And number one on that list is always and forever for me going to be the California live oaks. We're here in East County where the California live oaks are the most beautiful tree that we have. One live oak tree, mature, fully grown, can support up to 1,500 species of other life. They are so beautiful, so iconic, so much an important part of what we think we're seeing when we look at California. It's especially important to plant a live oak tree now because of the fact so many of the oldest of the trees out in the hills are being killed by the gold-spotted oak borer. That is a pest which is imported, and it is killing a lot of the old trees. But you can grow California live oaks on your property. What people don't understand is that's a fast-growing tree if you just hook it up to some irrigation while it's young. The first 10 years of life, you can water that tree year-round. You can put a dripper on it and walk away from it, let it get some water once a week, and it will grow to a 15 to 20-foot tree in just 10 years. And that's a good tree. That's a hardwood tree. That's not a junky tree like an ash. By the way, don't plant ash trees. There's a bad disease coming from back east, which is eventually going to kill all the ash trees in California, as it has all the ash trees from east of Ohio coming west. So plant yourself a beautiful California live oak. That wouldn't be limited to just the live oaks. If you live out in the back country, consider an Engelmann oak too. That was Kara Knott's favorite tree, and that is a beautiful tree. It's also known as a Mesa oak. It will take less water than the California live oak and do beautifully. Some other good trees, not all of them natives, that you could put in your yard. There are two great trees from Australia that do so well here. They're quick growing and they are great shade trees. They don't have any obnoxious habits. They don't have terrible roots. They don't drop a big mess. They're good trees. My favorite of them is called the peppermint tree or the peppermint willow tree. It's Agonis flexuosa. A-G-O-N-I-S, Agonis flexuosa. It's a beautiful tree. It has a natural weeping form, gets about 25 feet tall, maybe 15 feet wide, and grows very quickly. After a few years, you can shut the water off to it, and it'll make it on its own. It smells lovely, and it has the cutest flowers when it blooms. It hangs down something that looks like a black ribbon with little white flowers on it. The ribbon is maybe half an inch wide. It's really a cute tree. And everybody I know who's ever used it as a yard tree or on the side of the house has been delighted with it. A very similar tree is called the Australian willow, Geigera parviflora. It's about the same size. It's very drought tolerant. It's similar to the Agonis and a very popular small, non-messy tree. Now let's talk about a nice tree that's messy. What does that mean? Well, it means that it mulches itself. And since we want to mulch things here in East County, this is a great tree. It takes care of itself. It's an African sumac tree. You can see those in front of the El Cajon Library, all the way around the library. There's another one at the Rancho San Diego Library. That's the big tree that's kind of a dull green color out front, reddish bark. It's the first tree that I planted when I moved onto my property 13 years ago. It's very popular with birds. It grows with virtually no water once you get it established. After 2 years, shut the water off. It'll be fine on its own. That's a tree that if you prune it correctly while it's still a baby, it will grow the rest of its life for you, and you will never have to prune it again. Another small tree that's very pretty to put in your yard. Put in a bronze loquat. It's not a big tree. It'll never get over about 15 feet tall, maybe 12 feet wide, even if it's very successful. And the leaves are big and green and glossy, and it also bears fruit. Now, I personally don't care for the fruit. It has a big seed and kind of a weird orange fruit around it. It doesn't taste bad. It just doesn't seem to me worth the effort, but scrub jays adore it. I know that on my bronze loquat, I never get to eat the fruit because the birds find it before I do. So those are some ideas that you can try in your yard. And I think that all of these trees are basically pain-free. You won't be calling the pruning guy constantly to come and hack on it because these are good trees.
This concludes today's episode of East County Magazine's live radio show. We extend our appreciation to the San Diego Performance Academy for the use of their studio, to the Heartland Coalition, our parent nonprofit, and to KNSJ 89.1 FM, broadcasting from the heart of East County in Descanso. We also thank the musicians who provided music for our show, Laura Preble, Jim Hannibal, Corey Clement, Giovanni Galicia and the Smashing Beats, Donnie Gentile, Wooden Ambulance, Dusty Summer Road, Brian Boykel, Royalty Free Music, Frank Nora, Kevin McLeod, April's Dance from the Smart Sound Solo Simplicity Collection, and Turco, Nomads of the Silk Road. If you have story ideas or would like to underwrite the East County Magazine radio show, please contact editor@eastcountymagazine.org or call 619-698-7617. We'll be back soon for another edition of East County Magazine's radio show.